Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Insurers The Best Policy podcast. My name is Sophie Roberts and today I'm joined by Mark Randall, an elite performance and resilience coach and organisational mindfulness specialist. Our podcast this week, as you might have already gathered from Mark's job title, is focusing on something a little different from our regular schedule. Today we'll be discussing mental health, and more specifically mental health and the drivers of stress in the workplace. 2020 has been an undeniably difficult year for mental health. The threat of infection, repeated lockdowns, social isolation, and economic uncertainty have created widespread fear and anxiety. And although this industry is resilient to many things, no one is completely resilient to the circumstances that have been created by COVID-19, or indeed the management of stress more generally. It is against this backdrop that we're delighted that Mark was able to join us to discuss these important topics. For Mark, the most important asset any business has is its people, and so they therefore must be looked after. This is his mantra. Having spent 40 years as a frontline broker for financial and commodities markets at a major investment bank, Mark is all too familiar with the stress and the pressure individuals working in high-stress industries can face, and is both careful and practical in his advice and commentary about mental health in the workplace more generally, while factoring in the wider impact caused by COVID-19. He is also close to the insurance industry, having participated in last year's Diven Festival, in addition to working with Lloyds, Marsh and several other well-known industry household names on both resiliency and mindfulness. During this episode, we discuss some of the major mental health events of 2020, exploring how these have arisen, manifested and continue to challenge individuals in the workplace. We discuss the importance of improving our understanding of what mental health is, to remove any stigma attached to it, to focus more on the origin rather than the problem. And Mark runs us through a range of strategies and interventions he has seen work successfully to help improve mental health in this industry, as well as others, which we should all take note of. I don't doubt that many of our listeners will find some of this content really relatable. I know I did. But first, we start by talking about how mental health was viewed in the workplace before the world changed in 2020.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to this quite renowned podcast, and I'm delighted that you're covering this particular topic. Going back to your question, I think really since the year 2000, we've been sort of, as society, realizing that it wasn't just about physical health and that there was a mental health aspect that we needed to start paying attention to. And there seemed to be this movement really through the early years after the millennium, where I think some news out of the WHO, the World Health Organization, started to indicate that mental health sort of based conditions were becoming a massive killer, really, and that to the same level of, sort of cardio problems and cancer problems. So it started to get onto the radar, and certainly corporates were, building it into some of their programs. They were making it more of an awareness thing to watch out for certain signs, but also they were putting flags out and signposting support for employers through employee assistance programs where people could go to find help. And of course, we started to see more charities turn up. So, Mind got a lot more organized and Heads Together came about. And so we also, with social media and with the help of the major TV channels, we started to see this momentum increase. Probably in the last 5 years, where there was a lot more talk about it and there was a lot more sharing of it's good to talk and let's talk about this and let's familiarize ourselves with just what's going on in this space and get understanding that we're all vulnerable and our mental health state as individuals is variable and that life isn't a straight line and it's full of lumps and bumps and there are things that we can cope with and if we've not got the right toolkit, there are other things that are just difficult. And we've started to appreciate that.
Yes, so looking now at 2020, of course, what have been the major mental health events of this year? And what I mean by that is, focusing on the rolling impact of COVID, which has obviously triggered a lockdown. It created job insecurity. People are in isolation. Those are the type of mental health events I'm referring to.
So suddenly having something being labelled a pandemic just doesn't get you in a great place when you're looking at risk and you start to wonder what does it mean for me and family and all the support around that. And of course, as the year has evolved, it then had a significant impact through lockdown on the workplace itself. And if we look at the workplace where, we have this overconnectivity, being overwhelmed through this, the nature of back-to-back meetings, our social connectivity has moved away from physical to be much more online. With that comes the problem that, rather than having space between meetings in the physical world, we tend to have one thing just roll into another. So I think that the challenges of 2020, I think, are still being realized. We've got the avoid others at all costs type mentality, and since we're social animals, that presents challenges in its own right. But we've got the adjustment of workplace to workspace, and the fact that there's a sense of isolation of people who are working from home, and there's a sense of, like I say, there's this overconnectivity where people potentially could have stress generated from having their time being squeezed. Where do I fit my job in when I've got Zoom after Zoom after Zoom after Zoom? And they may be, as a consequence of thinking they perhaps got more time to themselves and not having to commute. I think there's also this problem that people are almost rolling out of bed, having a bit of breakfast and going straight to work, and potentially earlier than they would work normally. And sort of working through today with this interconnected Zoom and the increased level of email traffic that comes with this e-culture that's been forced upon us, whereby that people are not even considering that space and time in the middle of the day to take a break for lunch, and might well be eating their lunch whilst working through their emails. And of course, at the end of the day, if their time is getting squeezed to the extent that, where do they do their job? Of course, your job description doesn't tell you anything about emails and meetings, particularly in the new world. The chances are that there's a real risk that they're carrying on their work after their normal, workplace, let's go home time. And they could well be working their commute time, at home, but doing the work that they miss doing during the day. And of course, that presents a huge challenge. And I don't think people are looking at that enough. And I know that one of my neighbours is a professor at Imperial. And he was saying, look, Mark, in the old world, that I had this space, even between physical meetings, I could go and have a coffee, go and have a quick chat with somebody in that space between a meeting ending and the next one beginning. And there was sort of this buffer zone, and I made use of that. But now, I've got this world where one meeting ends and the next meeting starts almost immediately. And if I pop to the loo or pop to get a cup of tea, I'm already getting emails saying, where are you? And I think that, kind of sums up a lot of the fact that, the workplace has changed, and to some of it, one could argue on the face of it, to the better. But I think that there are things that will be emerging as we go through understanding the implications of this year that are actually potentially very, very negative on triggering people into a mental health event, as I call it. This sort of, and it could be anything. For all of us, that could be many, many things. And of course, when we look at each other, we perhaps from a work point of view, we might see calm, collective people that are getting on and that don't seem to have any problems in the background. But of course, we don't know each other. People care for each other. They may have had a bereavement with what's going on at the moment. They may have had an instance of COVID themselves that they're still dealing with. And often those things are not shared. So we're all slightly more vulnerable in this world, I think, at the moment. So we need to be quite careful about not only how we manage ourselves, but consider our impact on other people as well.
I'm quite keen to explore that a little further, given your experience within financial services and more recently the work that you've been doing within the insurance industry. What do you think are the most predominant mental health events, as you've just described them within this industry, and what have you witnessed?
Well, there's certainly it's shifted to a conversation about resilience, and that's for sure. How do we prepare for adversity? Because we know that adversity will come. As we say, life's just not a straight line. And so there's a lot more focus around, we realise that employee assistance programmes are a good go-to, and that we are doing lots of other good initiatives around mental health awareness, in conjunction with World Mental Health Day or Mental Health Week, all those sort of strategies that bring about the discussion. And some of that's obviously very comforting, because if we start to realize that we're not alone, then actually we can get some positive comfort for that. But it does differ from business to business. Of course, you start to understand when you engage with very large corporates that everyone's just slightly different about their approach, and the outcomes required tend to be very, very similar. At the moment, it's more of a resilience story, as I say. But it can be a strategy just to actually look at ourselves in a mirror from a sort of workplace perspective, and ask that question in dialogue with people like myself about what haven't we noticed? What do we need to start paying attention to that could be a problem that's in the pipeline for our staff Of course, if we start to look at, back comes on those out the examples I mentioned, where you've even got this back-to-back nature of the business and time getting squeezed and people not being able to do their job, that presenteeism, which is not supervised in the physical workplace, it would be supervised, of course, and someone would say, "You're here for the third night in a row to 8 o'clock. Can you just go home tonight, please? Get some home time and let's talk about some of the workflow that's making you stay late." That's not going on. So people are coming at me with, "Let's just interrogate this environment and ask our staff what are the challenges," and then design an engagement around what our preferred outcomes are. Our outcomes might well be, well, we need to perhaps change the culture. We may need to put some rules down, some red lines down about just our work practices. Because they're not being monitored, we may think they're fine and people are showing up, but you could easily have somebody working from home that's COVID positive that maybe actually need to be, they need to be looking after themselves, because there's no visual on that. In a physical workplace, you've got that supervisory sort of role. When people are working from home, I think that's not as clear as it was in the physical space.
Thank you. So previously offline, when we've been talking around this topic, we've talked a lot about the understanding of what mental health is and the significance of that. To what extent do you think there's a lack of understanding of this topic, and how does this lack of understanding prohibit people in the workplace to improve it?
Well, I think the whole topic has some degree of stigma about it. Owning up to a mental health problem, perhaps in the past, could have been perhaps disclosing a degree of weakness. And that stigma's just not useful. I don't think that stigma's really gone away. And some of the solutions, have got a stigma attached as well, which sort of poses a real problem. Some solutions, for example, certainly the mindfulness, the corporate mindfulness that I get involved with, enormously powerful to get that into a culture and to build it into people's sort of method of being and turning up at work wherever work is. But of course, some people think, "Oh, crap, a bit fluffy. I don't really want to do that. I don't really want to be seen to be doing that." So stigma, I think, is still a bit of a problem out there, and certainly we need to perhaps ask, do we need to look at it a bit differently? I know that there was a very, very good UK government paper done in around about 2008 called the Foresight Report that talked about emotional intelligence, and it talked about the collective mental capital of business and how that a business flourishes because actually you realize that there's a mental element staff and they can be optimized across the things that they do and their mindset improved. And we have a stress management program that can be very, very subtle but nonetheless present. That sounds a little bit more structural as an approach rather than just calling it a mental health approach. But I think we do need to ask the question about how do we position this? How should we wrap this up so it's not got this stigma attached, but it just feels normal. It just feels like we've all got this risk. So let's just talk about, well, how do we manage things as they show up, and what tools can we pick up that are useful that suit us? Because there's a whole broad church that's out there in terms of solutions. And I've been doing some coaching recently with some board level executive and a trader. And I showed them a portfolio of tools that they could use to manage themselves. And one chose one route that was almost the other end of the spectrum to the other. And thousands of people have come through this type of training. And you get to realize that we're all the same in some respect, but we're all really, really different. And whilst I might like meditation or something, then someone next to me might just like really just going for a good walk and getting fresh air, and just tuning into the sensation of walking. So lots of ways of doing it, but we need to appreciate that we need to be given the access opportunity and knowing that there's tools out there that actually can be not just really, really good for practically managing our mental health and the stress component of that, but it helps to drive a more positive mindset. From a business level, it builds a better mental capital to drive your business. And actually, we tend to be happier and healthier as a result as well.
And of course, certainly when we think about the solution, no one size fits all. But a lot of the narrative around this topic focuses on the problems associated with mental health. But surely it's about going to the origin. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what might businesses be doing to trigger a mental health event for an employee.
Well, wrong culture. I mean, historically, is there any bullying going on within the workplace? And that can be very, very subtle. But I think if we look at the sort of the COVID workplace, I mean, as I've sort of brushed over, this concept of what is squeezing our people's time, what is making them frustrated to not be able to do their job, A, at all, and B, certainly at an optimal level of performance. And we need to start stepping back a little bit and looking at the things that we've got. Now, it could well be the social isolation that we don't really have. The new workplace, even if you're physically at work, you've got some degree of separation now. But the opportunities for a little chat on the side, a bit of a laugh about maybe I'm a celebrity last night or something, those little moments are like really, really precious for us to manage ourselves throughout the day. And we may not have those anymore, particularly if you're working from home. You could well be in front of your computer zooming for the entire day. And I think many people will be listening to this thinking, yeah, that's me. And it's got worse. So we need to ask the question about, well, if we do a meeting, who are we inviting? Is it necessary? Does it have an appropriate agenda? Can it be 15 minutes long rather than an hour long? Those types of questions, non-emails. Who am I sending an email to? Should I be sending so many? Is it important? Can I just pick up a phone and have a chat? Because emails, words are just 7% of the effectiveness of communication. The rest is body language and tone. Of course, that's not contained within an email. But we can misread and misconstrue emails. But of course, if you're trying to do a busy job and a three-page email turns up of detail that you've got to read, it's not doing your job any favor that you then have to switch your focus off maybe a critical task to then change it to going into working out what this email's about. And if the person that had originally sent that email out had then decided to add an executive summary of three core bullets followed by some action points, then A, it's taken him a short amount of time to write it in the first place, and maybe he attaches the document if it comes from his files. But the person receiving it is going to have a much better chance of just understanding what's going on really, really quickly, and it's not going to drag them away too much from what they're doing. But of course, the subject matter is quite important in email too. There is a temptation to think that in the workplace we do have a culture of some an email turns up, we click on it, we read it, we let go of it, and we sort of move on. But if we could make the subject line really, really important, so that if it is something that we really need to read, it's sort of telling us to read it. So I think we need to look at that traffic as well, because no doubt this current environment has created an awful lot more of e-traffic. And if people aren't managing the quality of that traffic, the caliber of it, and to some extent the frequency of it and the breadth of it in terms of the number of people getting CC'd, then they could well be tying up a business in all this e-chat and again taking people away from what is their job. And I'll come back to the point again, as people feel their time is getting squeezed, their stress will increase, and their risk of having an adverse reaction to an even bigger adversity just becomes more prevalent.
Yes, so that's really coming through in this conversation, and I'm sure a lot of people listening can really relate to that. So I'm keen for us to also talk about stress, but before we do that, I'd be interested to know what strategies or interventions have you seen work successfully to improve the mental health culture within the insurance industry?
Well, certainly with the dive-in event, I think, and some very good new accounts for me sort of emerged from that. And I think that what is becoming clear from my previous work too, that certainly the concept of just talking about, sharing each other's challenges and what we've individually done to deal with that has been particularly useful. Certainly if executive get involved in that, and we start to understand that even the best of us get these difficulties, and I'm not alone in what I'm experiencing, and actually that makes me feel a lot better, and that I can share a bit more detail about perhaps how I've dealt with it. I remember one particular business had a sort of whiteboard where it encouraged people with things that were challenging them just to put a sticker on a board anonymously, and for other people to write little notes underneath it that might be of comfort or of help or of guidance. And And that worked really, really well. But I think it does depend on the culture of the business. But certainly as a generic, signposting things is really, really important. So for staff to just know where to go if they've got something emerging that they actually want to talk about and need to perhaps seek some guidance about is important. As I say, we're all very vulnerable to this variable state of mental health that we can go through, triggered by the most daft of things. And we need to realize that. And so having the ability to talk, the ability to find support, and the ability to engage with consultants like myself to actually work on a bit more of a bespoke outcome-driven type solution is really, really important. And of course, it's about the triggers. I think it's a real key point that you're beginning to raise here. We perhaps talk too much about, having mental health problems, and we don't perhaps ask enough about, well, what within our remit is controllable in terms of triggering our staff, and what can we perhaps look to see what we can modify. And that conversation is definitely going on at the moment.
I imagine that obviously language is really important as well. You mentioned earlier sort of vulnerability and how it's good that mental health challenges and events are becoming much more the norm and in conversation. But obviously, as you have said, there is still this stigma about it. Language must be so important then, and I'd be interested to know what your experiences are in that, particularly in an industry such as financial services as well.
Sure. When I first started the journey, and obviously I practiced a mindfulness approach for getting on for 4 decades, and much of that as a futures broker. And of course, the concept of futures broker and mindfulness is not two things you'd normally put together. But hey ho, that was my journey, and it was me dealing with spinal arthritis and all sorts of things. And when I came to put this into an investment bank culture, I was really, really conscious that I didn't want to call this mindfulness. I wanted to get people to turn up. So it was positioned as like MindFit, the power of now, I think is what we called it, stealing a piece off of a key publisher that's out there. But we positioned it like that. And then it was about the dialogue and the journey that from my corporate experience, it needed to be worded in a fashion that resonated with people that were in the corporate space. So it was about actually me showing up as me, as an authenticity, if you like, and it was about my body language and my tone, and the subtleties around the words that I was using and some of the examples I was sharing, and some of it stemmed from the U.S. military, and which perhaps is perhaps a little bit overplayed now, but it was important to just share that there's some pretty serious people getting involved in this stuff. Because they need to manage themselves in unpredictable, difficult environments. And so I also had to tell my story. So I had to just reveal my own vulnerability, some of the things that I was suffering, like panic attacks and faint attacks and all sorts of stress where one lost focus and couldn't do the job and felt overwhelmed and making silly mistakes. And that sort of comes about. And of course, I was lucky to have found my own route into self-management using these sort of mind fitness techniques, let's call them. And it was a method of being as well. So I was showing up for life in a very different, more engaged, more aware way, and more tuned into my senses than I ever was, and finding this huge portfolio of benefits. Now, when I position that to the business in that package, it just went bananas. It became, I think, one of the most attended non-mandatory training courses that was out there. But I think the success was the formula. I've been on my own journey, and some of it was down to me. So it was a bloke had done this from your environment, had suffered all this stuff, and had come about this sort of solution, and I'm going to share it with you. And that formula is just so compelling. Because you capture the audience, they are part of that journey, and they go away with having these little tools and things and these next steps, and it often worked into workshops and other things, but they certainly were inspired to actually, from the glimpse of what this stuff could do, to actually go on their own journeys. And I saw thousands and thousands of people go on that journey, and when I began it, I didn't expect that, but I think the success was down to all of those ingredients that represent that equation about, well, how do you deliver this in the most effective way? I guess happened to have all of those ingredients were the right ingredients.
Yes, of course, like the way people, can relate to it. Yes, it's really interesting. So obviously we can have this conversation without talking about stress, but I also appreciate that stress is a huge contributor to anyone with mental health challenges, in the workplace particularly. So what tends to happen, Mark, when we experience stress, and do we always recognize it in ourselves?
It's a very complex question. I think that, if we think of ourselves when we're a little bit quiet, when we're, got a negative mindset, where we're sort of walking around in a bit of a slump, looking at the floor, maybe breathing lowly and talking slowly, it's probably because we're under some degree of stress. So when people go a little bit quiet, I think that the bit of a warning sign is, just what's going on is. Do we need to nowadays put the virtual hand on someone's shoulder, but in the real world, put your hand on someone's shoulder and say, "Are you okay? Can I help with anything?" I guess having that conversation. So, I think that it does show up differently. It can show up at work through performance and error rate going up, but it can show up with just not seeming to be bothered about how you even care for yourself. You may turn up, you may have been looking, sort of well groomed, and you've suddenly dropped the ball a little bit, and that may be reflective of people having problems. People binge eating can be a sign too, and also in conversation, reacting rather than responding, sort of saying things and thinking, "I shouldn't have said that, and I should have given that a bit more thought." And that can show through in emails as well, where you fire off this email and you think, "Oh God, what have I just sent off? I should have, guess taken time to pause to get myself into a better place."
I think that is some really, that's a really relatable experience.
Absolutely. That moment of pause is so powerful if you can put it into conversation or even your reactions within the workplace. And you can pause in different ways. My mother would say count to 10. I would say, that just that moment of just calming yourself down, and you can do it through breath, and there's all different sorts of ways. And of course, we can talk about that beyond this particular podcast, but there are mechanisms, even standing up and just going for a quick 2 minute walk and paying attention to the sensation of walking and coming and sitting back down again can be really, really helpful.
So my next question, is about sort of simple techniques or exercises that can that we can all employ to avoid, or at least help us manage stress and help us deal with the uncertainty that there is. I mean, you've just listed off a few there, but I don't know if you want to sort of wrap any of these, techniques up in a fuller response.
Well, I think from a natural state of being, we need oxygen, water, and rest. So make sure you're hydrated, because if you're dehydrated, you start to get a bit foggy. And if you get things that are difficult to cope with, it becomes more difficult if you're dehydrated. If you've not got good oxygen supply, and that seems a bit daft, but we can get really stale environments. So, keep your windows open. Before you go, start work, go for a fake commute. Walk out the front door, go for a 10-minute walk or jog or something, and come back in and then engage with work. Fit little and often bits and pieces of pause during your day. But certainly, water and oxygen, don't forget that. Seems obvious, but people totally forget about those sorts of things. And also rest. If we can manage our day better today in terms of putting these pauses in, parking the day somewhere, trying not to be having a presenteeism type culture, and going to bed and resting well, and then waking up, having a good night's sleep. Rest is so significant. So, and our rest and the way we are today is often how we managed ourselves yesterday.
Great, thank you. So these are really useful. Certainly I could definitely employ the latter and prioritize rest much more than I do. But as we move towards the end of our conversation and throughout this, one of the things that's become quite clear to me is that it's such a challenge for us to be able to support our colleagues remotely. Personally, I feel extremely lucky and fortunate to feel very supported by my colleagues. We are fortunately a very talkative and chatty bunch. But I suppose if people are dealing with mental health events and stress, what can others in the business do to support someone more generally? And are there things we can do as a group or a team to support and look after each other, especially in the climate where we're working remotely and we're so reliant on technology, and we've lost a lot of that face to face.
Yeah, well, I think the workplace through this technology has become a lot more sterile. It's sort of, it's kind of like that's work, and it's that's got these little micro breaks within it. So I think we need to access humor whenever we can. We need to access just what laughter can do to us in a very positive way. We need to think about music as well. Music can really be a real healer, and we can feel very, very different from a mood point of view if we access those types of things. But I do know that there are some businesses that do a crazy hat Thursday. So every Zoom meeting, everyone's got a crazy hat on just because it's a bit funny. And I guess trying to cut the edge off the seriousness. There are others that are doing sort of virtual soundtrack discos where this Thursday I'm going to run my soundtrack and you're going to listen in, and we're going to have a bit of a jive about it. But people are trying to access the stuff that we're probably missing, that in the old workplace we used to sort of do, but in the new workplace we're probably not doing, but we should be doing a lot more of it. And cut out the negative overload news and start to focus on as much positive stuff as possible.
Absolutely. And just to wrap up, Mark, and thank you so much for your insight and your time today. What's the one message that you would really like to get across to businesses about how to become more aware of mental health?
Critical message at the moment is to step back a little bit and get us asked the question, are we assuming things are okay when actually we should be asking the question, in this new environment, have we created an environment that's just more likely to trigger off our staff feeling challenged, feeling overwhelmed, feeling stressed, because they sort of can't escape from the super connected way that we're now connecting. And we need to ask that question very seriously. And if the answer to that is, we notice that there is this almost unsupervised, overconnected workplace that's now in place, then we need to have a plan to deal with that. And we need to think quite seriously about having a slightly less sterile approach to the workplace and fitting in, moments of humor and moments of chit chat and laugh. Because in the old workplace that happened, but in the new workplace that might not be happening. And I think if people are managing themselves and their mental self throughout the day, the old way was probably part of the healing, part of the process of dealing with things. That you could have a little chat about something that went on television last night and have a bit of a laugh and then go back to your job. And I think that could well be missing from the current way that we're doing things.
Thank you very, very much, Mark. And I think that's a really important takeaway. And I hope that anyone who is listening has found their moment today to have a happy thought and continues to do so for the rest of the week and indeed year. Mark, thank you very, very much for your time. It really has been a pleasure talking to you.